I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rant room, we let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the rant room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, and we keep it 2023, y'all. Yeah, on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Chris Derrick is out today, but we got a dope show for y'all. So you guys are grown. Let's go ahead and get into the show. So today, we got the little sis in the building. I call her that because, you know, I got it like that. Megan Dane, right?
Hello.
Did I say that right?
That is right.
Oh, that's a pimp word. All right. Okay, cool. Megan Dane and my little homie, JR. Hold on. I had it. JR.
You got this.
Fuck, I've said it earlier, like, to myself with no problem. I know the thal is there. Okay, hold on. JR Zamorthal.
Hey, oh, there we go.
There it is. Welcome to the show, y'all two.
Thank you so much for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Super excited. This is going to be awesome.
Indeed. They have a dope show you guys should see, Hollywood Confessions. Tell them just briefly, like, what? Give a little pitch on what that show's about.
Yeah, totally. For sure. It's Hollywood Confessional.
Confessional, my apologies.
All right. And it is Hollywood Secrets Anonymously Told. Mm-hmm. There you go. It's we came up with the idea when we were talking about... As support staffers and people coming up in Hollywood, we're like, you know, there are so many things that happen behind the scenes that people can't talk about.
Right.
Because, if anybody knows you talked, you'll never work in this town again. And that threat is very real. Thanks. And so, you know, we thought there should be a place where people can tell their stories and, like, secretly and anonymously reveal all this mm-hmm. shit that happens behind the scenes.
And I love how you guys have, you know, actors come in and, like, so say somebody tells a story, an actor comes in, if I'm correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And reads it as if they're the person who read it, who said it, right?
Totally. Well, it was super important to us to keep the show completely anonymous.
Right.
And so we have people come in, they give us our confession, we make a transcript of that confession and have actors read it, add sound design, and make it a really fun, engaging story that no one can ever trace back to the person that told it.
Right. It's dope. I've had a couple of favorite moments, but I think my favorite one is the director when he tells that story.
Yes.
The comeback. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I related to that story so much.
Mm. Oh man.
Oh my God. And it's one of those stories just for the audience, and I want you guys all to listen to it. It's one of those stories where you hear the stories. We've all talked to people who came here in a year, they had success. And you're like, you motherfucker. And you
say, oh yeah.
You
say, oh yeah.
The cool thing about this story is, yes, he had that early success, but he's one of those people who could have gotten caught up in that one-hit wonder type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Where no, totally.
The thing happened, and then, what was it, 25 years later?
Yep.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah. incredible. I mean, one of the things that I think we all have to learn in our own way is the meaning of that. Like, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Right.
And, like, you know, you can say that.
Right.
But then when years go by and nothing happens for you, and especially if you had a break at one point and then you don't get another one,
right.
I mean, the endurance that it takes and the faith in your own vision is crazy. Just incredible.
Crazy. Crazy. Yeah, but I mean, there's so many stories like that that mm-hmm. you hear that I think, I know you guys initially did this, you know, for support staff or the assistant, you know, but I see it's definitely moving and changing. You're adding, you know, just everybody.
Yeah,
you
there's so many stories out there. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was important to us to get the assistant stories out there because mm-hmm. so many bad things happen to assistants on their way up.
I mean, we've heard.
But yeah, we've heard.
We know nothing of this.
But then when we opened up to a broader, you know, group of people giving us stories, I mean, there's just so many amazing stories out there that, you know, those stories keep me going. Yeah. You know, I've got a bad day and then I remember something that we recorded on the podcast and it's like, you know what? I just got to keep moving.
Right. And I mean, did you listen to Porn Car yet?
Porn Car.
No, it's early in season one. Okay. That's another one that's one of my favorites because it's just like incredibly wacky shit that mm-hmm. happens too that, like, again, people can't really talk about, but it's also one of the things that I think makes us fall in love with this business mm-hmm. that, like, all the insanity right. is, I mean, there's something wrong with us, I guess. We like that. and so that was another thing that we kind of learned to incorporate too, and that we're looking to kind of to continue pursuing in this current season is just like stories. What season are you in? Fun stories.
This is season two for us.
Okay, because mm-hmm. I think it jumped me to two. And it either jumped me to two and I heard an episode or two and then it jumped me back. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
But because it doesn't show me what season it is or whatever online. But I was cooking last. I heard two episodes while I was cooking. You know what I mean? So it's, and they go by fast for me.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's great to hear. We like the idea of keeping it short too. We debated about length and thought nobody has time for like the hour long except for
my show.
Your show. Yes. But for something like a storytelling podcast, I think it sort of requires a bit of an investment.
Yeah. I don't have any issue with the length. What I found was when I was trying to do a 30-minute, 45-minute episode about somebody's entire life, I was
that's way too short.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And people were like, why are they so short? And I was like, I thought that's what y'all bitches wanted. So
this is the kind of podcast that I craved when I was an engineer. Like, I'd be listening all day at work. I'd want 3-hour podcasts about writers. So there's a place for all these different types.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because, and here's my question for you guys. I used to deal with, when I first started, it became clear to me, like, what my audience and who my audience was going to be. I'm just curious for you guys, what have you guys found out for yourselves? For me, it was like, okay, I'm talking to mainly people of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of white women listen to my show, too, believe it or not. Because they understand what the fuck are we talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And so I used to be bothered by the fact that, now this is, years ago, like probably the first year and a half or two, it took me. Eventually, I was like, "That's my audience. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. I don't need to have, using John and Craig as an example. I don't need to have their 20,000 people who listen to the show a week. I'm okay with my one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Or two, whatever. Sometimes it depends. And here's the other thing I found: the show you think is going to have huge is usually not the one. It's the one that people connect to.
Mm-hmm.
It could be just me talking with some young writer who's coming up, and that's the one people listen to the most.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the one with a certain showrunner on there. Mm-hmm. You just think it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not true. It's not mm-hmm. true.
We found the same thing with our show. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's episodes that I think are brilliant, are hilarious, but the one that got the most pop is the one that everyone connected to, and that's mm-hmm. about composers.
Oh, yeah. That's the other one. Yeah. That was mm-hmm. deep. That was deep.
And I think a lot of people just didn't know what's going on in the TV and film composing world.
I had no idea.
And we had so many composers on Twitter sharing that episode because they were like, holy shit, like somebody's actually telling how it is.
That's good. That's dope. All right. So one of the things I wanted to have you guys on, you know, as working in the support staff, I know you guys are hopefully in the next year, clearly going to be out of that.
Here's hoping.
Well, I think you're on the right track. I think you both are savvy and smart enough to be out of it. I think you both are savvy and smart enough to be ready for it now.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
And so let me just ask you, Megan, where are you from and like, how did you get into the game anyway?
Sure thing.
Okay, that's enough.
Well played. Yeah, I'm from Texas, so we go slow. So let me tell you about my story. Yeah, I'm from small town East Texas, and couldn't wait to get the hell out of there, and didn't know what I was doing with my life, and bopped around doing a whole bunch of things. And I mean, my story is very strange because I didn't have any thought of being a writer, but I always wrote. And
were you doing like short stories and poetry?
You know what? What I mostly ended up doing, any job, because I was always hustling. Like I always had to make money. And any job I ended up having, I always somehow found a writer role in that job.
Okay.
And so I sort of started like cobbling together a weird little portfolio of things that I had written for various jobs. Mm-hmm. And then there came, giving away a little bit how old I am, the recession, 2008-2009, and I couldn't find any kind of job anywhere. Mm-hmm. And had to go like way outside my comfort zone, and ended up getting a job or applying for a job as an undercover decoy for a private investigator.
Oh, that's a good experience. You needed that.
It was very unusual. The way that it kind of unfolded was I went in for this interview, and of course I totally bullshitted on my resume and made it sound like I knew what I was doing as an undercover decoy when I had no business being in that world. And but I also added that I had written these little things.
Right.
So I go into the interview, and the PI is like, well, you know, I notice you've done some writing. And my PI firm is really blowing up right now, and I need somebody to write a book about it. And I thought you could train as a private investigator and write this book.
Wow.
So I'm like, wow, that sounds amazing. Oh, my God, dream come true, you know? And so I started doing it. And then little by little, I find that he's actually a criminal.
Ooh.
And he's working with a bunch of dirty cops, and they are building this whole criminal enterprise, and they're using the PI firm as a front. This is a true story.
Wow.
And
they wanted a book?
They wanted a book as part of like this facade, this propaganda that he was creating to kind of like hide what they were doing behind the scenes. And so
make it look like it's legitimate.
To make it look legit. Okay. And yeah, because it was such a fascinating like lesson in how the media can be manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
Because the PI firm ended up blowing up, and all of a sudden there are all these talk shows and like all these really well-respected media outlets doing stories on this PI firm, which is completely bogus. And I have this book, which is also completely bogus.
Wow.
And the level of crimes that were being committed was continuing to escalate.
Okay.
And so I personally got to this point where I was like, I'm about to go down in flames. Like some real serious shit is about to happen to me. I got to get out of this. And so what I did was I had some friends living in LA. And I was like, hey, I'm going to go visit my friends in LA for a little bit. I'll be back soon. And then I just like moved down here and like changed my name, changed my number, never went back.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And so two things ended up happening. One, thank God I like bailed when I did, because they all ended up going to prison.
Wow.
And the other thing was, like, weirdly, as crazy as that experience was, it was the first time I had ever thought of myself as a writer.
Mm.
And so once I was here in LA and I had that feeling, I was like, I don't ever want to do anything else for the rest of my life. So I started pursuing writing as a career.
Can I interrupt you for one second?
Yeah, of course.
I was just thinking about, this is no matter what you do in the industry, specifically writing, acting, directing, whatever, nobody thinks they're a real writer, director, or actor until they get a job.
Yeah.
When there's something about being paid for something
that
immediately clicks in your head, oh, I'm legit.
That's right.
You know, whether it's union or non-union or whatever, but there's something about getting a check. So go ahead.
Yeah, it's very validating. And that boss, as you know, for all the terrible things that he did, he would call me the writer.
Mm.
And that was very validating. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I was hooked on that feeling, you know.
Well, it sounds good on his end too, though.
Yeah, yeah. It made me sound more important. So it worked for him. He definitely wasn't doing it for me.
Okay, I got to ask before I get to Jay. How much money you moved to LA with?
Oh, at that point, I had none.
Mm.
I had none because I was supposed to get paid for this book and I had not been paid yet. And so, I mean, I had like
So you weren't getting your weekly salary there or anything?
I wasn't. I got paid $6,000 to write a book proposal, and I was there for a year.
Wow.
So trust me, that $6,000 was gone. I had nothing whatsoever. I had like maybe $25 and a credit card.
Wow.
And yeah, and I was crashing on a floor in a studio apartment with two other friends.
Oh my God.
And just like, I had no idea what I was going to do. But yeah, I mean, I found various jobs to kind of scrape by and ended up working my way back in and started out in features, had a feature made, realized I didn't really like that process because it was very lonely. So I shifted to TV and, you know, kind of worked my way back in from there.
Okay. What genre was that?
The film?
Yeah.
It was a contemporary Western thriller.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's called West of Redemption. I think you can get it on Amazon. Not sure. It was, you know, little, yeah. little indie film.
I have a couple of them.
Yeah, don't really remember.
I know exactly. Now, I'm like, I don't remember what the title is because they changed the title.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Hey, it's a good experience, though. You know, like I always tell everybody, I'll get you in a sec, Jay, is your job, this is just my opinion, your job as a writer is to do a number of things. One of them is to become a produced writer.
Mm.
So my first movie that I sold... This quick little sidebar. So I gotten on the list with Sundance, and what happens is you get on the, whether it's Austin, Sundance, those big ones, everybody wants to get to you, right? Mm-hmm. So I was still acting at the time. This is like 2003. Another producer who was an actor signed to the same management company that I had had started his own company, was making these little indie movies, you know, and calls me out the blue going, I just saw your name on the list of sin. I didn't know you were writing. I was like, yeah. And he was like, you got any horror films? And I was like, well, I got this one I'm thinking about. It's a more of a thriller, but I could turn it up, you know, and make it a little music. So I walked in, pitched it to him. He bought it in the room. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
And I ended up writing it for him because he usually stars in his films. And it was like the first time he was going to really be an adult. I made him like a father and, you know, this and this. And he was like, we both came from playing on the Power Rangers and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's looking a little bit older. So I'm like, I'm going to give you a real role. You got a real job. Anyway. And so he spent the most money on this than he did on any other project. A year later, we went to AFM and sold it in 3 hours to like seven countries.
Damn.
Watch this. This is important. You relate to this. So I thought I was slick, right? Watch this. Watch this. So when we did my deal, I was like, I want a co-producer credit and I want half a point. And he was like, sure. And I was like, oh, he just gave it to me?
Yeah.
I go,
so how much could you have
watch
had?
Watch this. I'm supposed to get some ends.
All right.
So all of a sudden, a few months later go by, and I'm like, didn't we just sell that movie to all those countries? Shit, where my check at?
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, hey, where my check at? What check? I was like, didn't we sell it to all those countries? And he says, yeah. I'm like, he said, did you look at your contract? What you talking about?
Uh-huh.
He's like, we sold... internationally, your contract is domestic.
Oh my God.
I was like,
well,
oh,
lesson learned.
Oh, now at first I was upset, but I was more upset with myself because this is before the internet was big, so it wasn't like you going on Google to look up at the company and see what they do. I just was assuming some bullshit. So the lesson that I learned was you have to be a produced person. So what that did was allow, and all of a sudden people started going, hey, you want to be on this panel? You want to do this? And I was like, oh, that's what it was for. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. It wasn't about making a whole bunch of more money. Now I can say I'm a produced writer, you know, who has this film. And I got a co-producer credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the intention of it all.
That's really smart. And also, I wasn't that smart. But anyway... But you probably didn't know the person.
I don't have no idea.
Oh, I didn't know anything. I didn't know how to capitalize on anything back then. But and that's a lesson I'm still trying to learn. But one of the things that you mentioned that I thought was maybe interesting to highlight. You talked about you were an actor at the time.
Yeah.
And
since I was 12 to 33, 32, something like that.
Mm.
I'm 52 now. So
wow.
brother just pretty.
No way. Yeah. No way. Yeah. I would guess 40.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I did bite some necks last night, so it makes me younger the next day. You know.
Oh, that's how you do it.
Yeah, more on the how-to front. Yeah, because you're like telling us that this is a how-to sort or a how. This is the drive of the podcast. Right. And like, but what you said about like you were an actor at the time, and then that kind of like segued into, well, are you also a writer? Are you writing any scripts? And it helped me when I was to get my first film made. The reason why I was able to get it made is because I was working on crew. Oh, right. So like people saw that I was doing one thing and they're like, oh, do you do anything else? Right. And that's a weird thing. It's like, I mean, if you are just saying like you are only a writer and this is what I do and this is my passion and please read my script, for some reason that can be, it seems like to me that can be a turnoff for people.
It's a turnoff for me.
It's a turnoff for me too. Yeah.
Right? But if you've got other stuff going on, and then people will just come to you and start asking.
Yeah, it wasn't a turnoff back then because you didn't have the access you have today.
Right.
You know, now we know, damn it, you can make a movie with this thing. So now I know that you can, and that's all you do. I don't have any respect for you. I don't know what it is. It's just mental for me. What about you, Jay?
My story?
What's your story? Where you from?
Oh, man, you're making me go second. My story is not nearly as good as Megan's.
Your story is way better than mine. Yours has a happy ending.
Happy enough. So I came out here for school. I went to USC. But I
saw you with your little sweater on, with your mother and father all in the photos and shit.
Oh, man. So I came out. I actually came out to be an engineer. I originally wanted to be an architect, but my mom sat me down when I was going to leave for school, and she said, "You can't draw." And I said,
"Really?"
I said, "What?"
Mom.
She said, "You should be an engineer instead." And I said, "I'll be an engineer instead."
Hilarious.
But once I got to USC, you know, everybody's doing film. You catch an IMDb page just standing on campus.
<That's funny. laughs> Nice.
And so I got in a screenwriting class, and I immediately just loved it. I loved everything about it.
Did you guys study the sequence approach?
Yes, we did. I actually use the sequence approach.
Yeah, that's
than
how
X.
I write.
Yeah, I love sequences.
Yeah.
I even
do my TV in the sequences.
Oh,
it
really?
It makes it easier.
Really?
Yeah, I just break it all down. I think about it in act. And
you
like
you still use eight sequences for?
I use eight for features and six for TV with the teaser.
Interesting. Yeah.
You see my six?
Yeah. I might have to try that.
So it's just, remember, because back in the day, the sequences were eight and they were like 15 minutes long.
Right.
So now you have to make that shorter, even in movies today. So if I make a movie now, they're probably like 110 pages. So every 10 pages, I just look at it like
for
that.
Some reason, the sequences help me break down like what's supposed to happen. Like end of sequence one, you know, you've got this big thing.
Right.
And it works a little better than Axe for me, but I've never tried it for TV. That's cool.
It just makes it easier for me. I'm never afraid of that whole, you know, act three and four that just goes on and on and on or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? In TV, like it seems like those are the hard ones for a lot of people. Like they're getting to act two. Most people are great. As soon as you get to three and four, they're like, I'm not sure what should be happening. But to me, I go back to, well, where are we in the story? Oh, in the sequence, we would do this.
Yeah.
And now I've written so many scripts now that it's just like, how do I feel? You know, I feel like the character should be doing this by now. I feel like we need a rise and fall here. We need to end this act on some cliffhanger that takes us to this thing. I need a cool transition. Like, that's just how my mind thinks now. As before, I was like, well, where are we and what page and whatever. Now that's gone.
Yeah, I don't think so much about page number, but the organizational structure really helps, especially in the outline phase when I'm trying to figure out what the fuck the script's about. But so after college, I actually was an engineer for a little while. And I was an architectural engineer making ceiling and wall facades out of sheet metal and various other materials. Yeah, there's a couple buildings around LA that are, you know, they are my work. There's one in Echo Park where I actually made the tools to make the pieces.
Really?
And how many people can say that? Like, there are buildings in LA that are my work. That's amazing.
Talking about, he got an interesting story.
Exactly.
Very, very small buildings.
All right, I'm going to say something to you.
Yes.
So here's something that I figured out, and I'm sure you guys have figured out interviewing the writers you guys interview. This is whether you're a writer, director, producer, or anything. every single person that I've interviewed who made it on something that they, everybody told them not to do, right? Including myself. I wrote a script paper. It's like, why are you writing that? And I was like, because I have to, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, oh, yeah.
Here's the interesting thing that I was thinking about for yourself. All that stuff that you think isn't interesting is actually the thing that people leans in on.
Oh, man.
Am I right?
That is right. And it's the hardest shit to write.
And so the reason I'm saying that is never say, for example, and this is just using you as an example because you're here, but never say, oh, her story is better than my story, right? Because your story is interesting. You just are choosing not to tell us all the good stuff or stuff that hurt or stuff that, you see what I mean? If you told true, people would be leaning way in than just the fact that she did some cool thing with, you know, some PI or whatever. Not saying that's not going to generalize it. You know what I mean? Your story about spitballing, you know, your story about growing up with your alcoholic mother is much more interesting to me than you not telling me that.
Right. You see what I mean? Yeah.
But we'd go, I don't want them to know that that's that. But you guys know, being in writer's rooms, you got to share all that shit.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, yeah. Important to note here, I don't think JR's mother is an alcoholic.
No, God, no.
I think I said as an example.
I just want to clarify.
She will listen to this podcast, so I'm grateful for the clarification.
No, but it's really true, and also, like, that's something.
Fine,
that's
respect to you, mama.
But it's hard to learn, because it's like, you have to trust that people are going to, like, actually be interested in the, like, innermost workings of your heart, which is the stuff that you're really nervous about, and you feel like that's where all your insecurities live and everything, and like, are they gonna like me?
It's maturity, though. That's for example, just using myself as an example. Until I realized that my background, coming from the hood, being this little Afro punk rude boy, all that, and why I'm an underdog and how I write underdog stories, until I understood that, I was just another writer talking about, oh, I'm, you know, I write and blah, blah, blah. I do dramas. Mm-hmm. I do whatever. I wasn't able to lean into why. You know what I mean? And right. I was in a meeting with a producer, and he started talking about CBGBs. I was like, what you know about CBGBs? And he was like, oh, I used to be a punker. I said, you don't know who you're talking to. You know what I mean? And we had this conversation, who got the job? Right? And he said, you need to always lean in on that. You need to always tell people where you're from. Always tell people about that background. And I don't always get to meet brothers who were, you know, in the fishbone and all that shit like that. You know what I mean? That's the important part. You know what I mean? So once I did, I lean on it now. I throw away the fact that I'm gay. I just go, oh, yeah, I'm black, gay, blah, blah. Throw it away. You know what I mean? Whatever the insecurity is, I've learned in my maturity that that's the thing that people go, oh, that's, oh, he's not like, oh, he's not just a regular homeboy. You know what I mean? He is from the hood, but he's the guy in Dope. He's the cool nerd. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Totally. Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, it used to be really hard for me because, you know, I was in an engineer. I was frustrated and angry and depressed because I couldn't figure out how to get back into writing. And every time I'd tell the story, it'd be like living it again.
Right.
And reopening those wounds, getting re-angry about the time I wasted. But now, nowadays, I generally lead with the fact that I used to be an engineer, especially because as support staff,
it's
a shorthand for letting people know I have a certain level of competence.
Yeah. Yeah, which you gotta be fucking smart. Let's just keep it real. Here's the thing, though. I love that you said that. Here's the thing that I'm thinking about is, I always say you should lean in on it for a number of reasons. Number one, it's what separates you. The PI story separates you.
Oh yeah,
being an engineer separates you, right? And here's the thing I want you to know. Never regret the thing that happened to you. So I grew up thinking my childhood and growing up in the hood the way that I did was a bad thing. I didn't realize it's actually a good thing and covers so many things within the realms of what I need to be doing. Right? So embrace the fact that you were an engineer in a good way, because it showed you how to think a certain way? Because I bet it helps in your writing.
Oh, definitely.
That's why you embrace it.
Right. Not only in my writing, but in my maturity.
Sure.
I don't think I would have had nearly the maturity needed to make it as far as I have if I hadn't have, you know, gotten knocked on my ass a couple times.
Yeah.
As an engineer.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Now, let me ask you, Megan, and I'll come back to you. How did you end up in the support staff route?
I, you know, like I said, I had had this feature made and didn't enjoy the process, the solitude.
Did you get to go produce? Did you get to be on the set?
I got just a couple days on set, but it was very much like, you know, it as it generally is in the feature world, writing is a separate thing from production, right? So once you're done writing, it's like, okay, bye. And
you're just sitting by Video Village watching
things. If that, And like TV was kind of blowing up at the time, like Netflix had just started streaming, and so you could, you know, see a whole series all at once, which was something really new back then. And it was very exciting to me because I had never, the way I grew up, I wasn't really allowed to watch TV. And so I hadn't really ever experienced that kind of long form storytelling before. Right. So I was like, oh, wow, this is really great. And also you can, I mean, writers rule in TV, which is awesome. And I was very excited.
Say that again. We want
writers rule in TV. Yes, we do.
And, that's a teaser, bitch.
That's right. And I love the team aspect of it, right? So all of that really appealed to me. But I was like, I have no ins. And I tried everything I could. You know, I was like working all my connections at that time, everybody I knew. And I couldn't find anything. So I was like, okay. I had, at that time, I had an uncle who had just passed away who I was very close to. And he left me $20,000.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Where my 10%? This is what I'm talking about.
I didn't know you back then.
You're supposed to still have my 10%.
Next time I have a relative who passes away, I'll let you know. But yeah, so he was, like I said, I was really close to him. And of course, my first instinct with that money was I better pay off my student loans. But then I thought, what he would want me to do is do the thing that I have always dreamed of. And
you know, buy a yacht. He ain't nothing.
Right? Yeah. I mean, hey, if that was the thing, he would have loved it. But I mean, he didn't care about TV or whatever. He didn't care about my writing. He's just like, whatever you want. So I was like, let me take this time to, like, just do whatever it takes to get that job. Yeah. I want to work in 1 hour drama television. And so I'm going to use this money to support myself and just hustle my ass off until I get the job. Okay. So I quit the job that I was working at that time and took time off, networked my ass off, still couldn't find a way in. And then the craziest thing, here's another how for you. I was on the LA TV writers page on Facebook. And somebody posted, I'm working for a person who has a number of unpaid interns. And you only have to, you donate a couple hours of your time a week. In exchange, they hook you up. I know. Oh, believe me, I know. And in exchange, they hook you up with their connections. And of course, I mean, even at the time, I was like, oh, that's bullshit. But I had no other options, you know? So I was like, well, let me just go and see what this is about. And that interview was, I always describe it like How to Get Away with Murder. Because it was like 12 people in a room.
What? Really?
And we were all competing with each other to prove how quick we were. And I was like, I mean, on the inside, I'm like, this is such bullshit. But I'm also like, well, I came here. I'm going to fucking do it. And so I just did whatever I could to like pull ahead of the pack in that interview. It was brutal. And yay for me, I win this unpaid internship. But
hilarious.
Lo and behold, the next day, before I had even worked an hour for this person, I get an email saying, I have a friend who's a showrunner's assistant and who is a showrunner who needs an assistant. And if you're interested, send me your stuff. So I sent my stuff and that's how I got my first job in television.
Now, just for the people who don't know out there, what is your stuff you need? Is it just the resume? Do you have to show them a script? What do you do when you're trying to be a showrunner's assistant?
Yeah, in that case, it was a resume and a script. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure it's different for everybody. But it's definitely good to have a writing sample. They don't always ask for it, but quite often they do.
Explain why. Why do you think they ask for that?
Because especially with showrunner's assistants, a lot of times they like to mentor people. Mm-hmm. And so they want to know, you know, what is this person into, and what can I learn about them from reading their work? And, you know, is this a good match for what I do and what they do? You know, things like that.
Is it also because they depend on you sometime to read their work and
yes.
help them? Okay. I'm asking for the audience, actually. Just, you know, sometimes I do that. Interesting. Okay. So that's how you got your first. How long were you there? So you ended up getting the showrunner's assistant job?
I did. Okay. Yeah. And I was, I was an assistant to this person for about a little over a year. And
then did they have a show going? Did they have a deal going?
Yeah, so it was a show at first. Mm-hmm. And then they got an overall deal, and I was went along for that. But I really, really, really wanted to be in a writer's room. Mm-hmm. And they were going into development, which is a very, again, it kind of goes back to that solitary pursuit.
I was in 3.5 years of
that's hard. Development is hard. I mean, some people love it. I do not love it. Even for my own projects, I don't love it. And
I was six different projects.
Oh my God, that's hard. That's really hard.
Right before I was within six different projects. Yeah.
And you have to, right? It's just part of the process. But I don't know. It's tough. And I was getting older, you know, and that's a big thing.
It's a real thing.
And I was like, I don't think I have time to wait for these projects to, you know, gain traction. If I'm going to make it, I need to be in a writer's room now. That was my feeling. Right. And so, you know, we had a conversation about it and kind of went our separate ways. And I was very fortunate to meet an executive producer in that studio on the lot who, again, was like, oh, what are you looking for? And I was like, I really want to be a writer's assistant. I want to be in the room. He's like, oh, send me your stuff. So I sent my stuff, and I got that job. And that's how I continued from there. I got staffed on that show in the second season.
Right. That's dope. What about you? What was your first?
So I remember I was an engineer coming up on 3 years at the same job, and we got a new office manager. And so her and I were just making small talk. And she goes, how long have you been here? And I go, 3 years. She goes, this is your first job? And I was like, yeah. She goes, oh, so it's time for you to get another job then, right?
Ooh.
And it was like, I mean, it was like a lightning bolt hit me. I was like, holy shit, if I don't get out of here now, like, it's never going to happen.
Wow. That's game. Interesting.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I was, at the same time as I had this job, I had an internship at Broken Road Productions. Mm-hmm. And so I was starting to get a little confidence in my writing, starting to figure out how things worked. Mm-hmm. And I had enough confidence that I was like, I think I can quit now. I've got savings. I went to Spain
for a little. Where are my 10%?
I'm just putting it on the ledger, man. It'll all come in one day.
Y'all over here rolling.
So I ended up going to Spain for a little while to sort of settle my mind, get my mind right. I did Running of the Bulls with my little brother.
You did not.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I love that story so much more now that I know your little brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's an insane person. Awesome. I read Hemingway at too young of an age, and I knew when I wanted to be a writer, I was going to have to go do Running of the Bulls. So as my like present to myself to be like, I am now going to pursue my dreams. This is the first piece of the puzzle.
I'm just trying to picture him running over the Bulls.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
It was horrible. It was like drizzling a little bit and like
slipping and sliding.
Oh, it was crazy. Ooh. And I hear the rocket go off to release the Bulls, and I hear
it's a rocket.
Yeah, they have a rocket at the starting line.
Jesus Christ!
And I hear the thunder of the hooves.
Oh my God!
And I'm like, we gotta run. So me and my brother take off, and we're going. And I look behind me. I didn't know this. Bulls run at 30 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
You can't. No, you can't.
No, you cannot.
Why do people do this?
No,
it's ridiculous.
Well, you tell us.
So
Hemingway didn't.
He left that out of his book.
And they do it from what I've seen on TV. They do it in places where you can't just jump over a fence.
No, they lock you into the course.
Yeah, I bet you in there.
Yep.
So me and my brother are running. Oh, yeah. We're sprinting down the course, and I look behind me, and I start to see the bulls. And so I grab my brother, I slam him up against a shop, and I just cover him with my body.
Aww.
Because I know that if he doesn't come home, I can't come home. And so I feel the wind as these bulls are running past us, and you know they get past, and we follow them into the arena. My brother lifts up his shirt at the end of the day when you know we're all safe back at home, and he's got this monster bruise because I had so much adrenaline.
It wasn't even the bull.
No, it was me. Oh my god,
that's hilarious!
Such a great story.
So I come back to the States. I'm back in L.A. I realize L.A. is the only place I want to be. When I knew I needed to come home.
You wanted to do TV, or did it matter to you?
I was going to do anything. I think I wanted to do features just because, like, I thought maybe I could be an auteur one day. Like, I liked Wes Anderson a little too much. I came back and to tell the story, I was in Madrid. I was seeing a movie, and I knew where they had shot it. It was like a place that I knew in LA, and I thought if I could jump through the screen and be back in LA right now, I would. And so I knew I had to come back. And so I came back, and for about 18 months, I couldn't find anything.
Wow.
And I was fully ready to go back to engineering. I was taking interviews. Mm-hmm. I had a former boss put in a good word with a friend of his and interviewed there and was sort of waiting for that to come through when a friend of mine said that she just got on a show. It was Mass Chaos, so she got promoted from PA to writer's assistant because they didn't have a writer's assistant. Right. They were looking for a PA. And would I want to do that? And I said, absolutely, I want to do that. And I wasn't on that job more than a week, and the engineering job called and said, we've got a spot for you. You want to come work for us?
Yeah.
And I said,
That's how the universe works.
Yeah.
It tests the fuck out of you. I always say this. Oh, here's the other thing that I was going to say earlier, and forgive me, I missed this part. Same thing I was telling you about that story about that person before.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody I know, including myself, made it when I was ready to move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Soon as you give it all up, the universe is like, you want to wait one more day or you want to go today? You got to wait one more day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that. You can't put a time on it. It'll just...
Yep.
This is when... And there's an episode you guys did talking about when it's time to move or pivot or something. You and I talk about pivoting all the time. Sometimes you have to pivot. Sometimes it's like for example, I'm really big on like Shark Tank, and there's another podcast I listen to called The Pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is 7 out of 10 of them had created some device, right? Specifically on The Pitch, it's more tech stuff. Some device, some new app, whatever it is, right? And what they do is the thing that they created, they thought was the shit. And it turns out it's the thing that you use to turn like this is actually the thing that you can license to make millions. When you know this being an engineer.
Right.
But you have to be willing to go, but I made this thing. And everybody else is going, I don't care about the thing. All I need is that.
Right.
Right. And you have to be willing to pivot.
Yep.
And so it's the same theory to me is having the door open to know I might. Like, I came here to be I was a triple threat. I came here to be an actor. And I was in dance class 3-4 days a week. You know what I mean? I had no idea I was going to just be writing. No idea. But the door opened, and I was like, I don't have to wait 5 or 6 times out a year to be working on a set. Mm-hmm. I can get this feeling every day when I write. I'm done.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I was doing Hedwig and the Angry Inch. You know what I mean? I was like, the show ends, like, next week. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's definitely something that I think applies to writers especially. I'm sure it applies to everyone, but because one of the things that I think you're taught as a writer is you have to specialize. And so people, including myself, in some periods of my career, you get so like focused on, okay, I have to do this thing. Like I write half-hour comedies and I must be a half-hour comedy writer or whatever. And you get like pent up, you know, and like all your energy is kind of caught up inside you. And you have to, like, at some point, the universe or whatever you want to call it is mm-hmm. gonna show you another way. Like yep. I have this thing hanging in my office. It's like when God closes a door, he opens a window. Mm-hmm. So you got to see, oh, there's a window open over there. You know, and if you could see that and you go through that window or you let that light in or whatever you want to call it, then, I mean, it just frees you up in so many other ways and all these other things start happening for
and
you.
Sometimes that window is on the appearance a step back.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You climb through that window and you go, oh, I got to be an assistant again.
Yep.
But mm-hmm. what you didn't know was that again is at a place that actually elevates you
yep.
more than the other place did before. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Whatever it is. You were saying something a minute ago that I was going to jump into, but I want to pull you in right quick, JR. So let me ask you this. Oh, I know what it is. So you were talking about, and this is true, most younger writers, especially back in the day when I was coming up, it was all like, you're a writer, you're a drama, sci-fi, you know, comedy, whatever it is you, that's, you stay in that lane. What allowed me to be able to write so many different genres is I learned, and I have a lot of scripts, I learned early on I was writing to the same theme. So I could be writing a horror script, I could be writing something in the 1800s, I could be writing something today, but you notice I'm always, it's always about the underdog. It's always about how do they overcome? How do they, you know what I mean? It's always from the little boy's point of view of whatever, the, you know what I mean? I'm, that's my thing. And so no matter what script you open, you'll still see it. So that's where you don't lose me. That's the thing is people go, oh, I just want to do a drama. I want to do a comedy. But you haven't figured out what type of writer you are yet. That's where it goes wrong for me. Right? And that's what's always kept me going where I'm able to do assignments in all genres almost because it's the theme that I talk to.
Yeah. You I think that's that's a really great great thread, I guess, that people can find. Because that's what... That's the whole purpose behind your writing anyway, if you can find your theme.
And what is, how do you describe yourself as a writer?
Well, it's funny you say that after, I mean, you give this wonderful speech about finding your theme, because I did have a wonderful description of myself that had to do with my theme. And then I personally found that it was overly complicated. So I will give you both log lines.
Give me to them, and I'll help you whittle it down if you need to, but go ahead.
Well, so, all right. So what I was using before... and by before, I mean like up until this year. And then I was like, let me shift. Let me see if I can remember it. It was like, I write alternative coming of age stories about diverse characters in extraordinary circumstances. So that is true of all my writing. It's always
it's
like
funny. It's clear but like, a little vague at the same time. But go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, so I write comedies, I write dramas, I write all different kinds of you know, features and like shorts and all different kinds of stuff.
Right.
But there's always that becoming theme. However,
now I want to know how that ties into you though.
Well. Great question.
See, that's the thing people miss. They just come up with an idea of what they write, but they don't understand what their tie into it is.
Yeah. So maybe you can help me with this, because then it's like new version this year is I'm a crime writer with a long history of dealing with questionable characters, because that's true.
Because now I still want to get into that.
Like the why.
Yeah.
But there is something about that I haven't figured. I have not figured that out yet, because I've been, it wasn't just the PI. Like I have been in so many situations with different types of criminals and I'm always the fish out of water. So fish out of water is the theme and always like trying to work some shit out. And I don't exactly know what that is yet. So
I think you're on it. I think you're on it though. I think you're right. That's enough though. I get it. I get it. What about you, Jay?
I think most of my writing, probably has to do with the pursuit of happiness. I think I'm very interested in what it means to pursue joy and happiness. I think as a person,
he's very a romantic. Look at it.
Oh, yeah. I'm a romantic on the inside, big time.
So mushy.
Yeah. But no, I mean, me personally.
Saving his brother and shit. Look at it.
That was so my mom didn't kill me. Let's not make it too altruistic. But I think as a person, I'm much more motivated by not being in pain than actively seeking pleasure. And I struggle a lot with the idea that there's a certain privilege that comes with seeking pleasure. And so a lot of my writing deals with, like, does a character deserve to find their happiness? Like, what does it mean to find happiness? What is the cost of that? And and do you deserve that when maybe it impacts other people negatively?
Nice.
That's really okay. interesting.
That's not bad. Yeah. See, now I just want to... It's kind of like... here's where I'm going with this. So, you know, I've listened to probably hundreds of pitches in my life, right? And I've probably done a couple dozen. What I found is this, and I've said this on the show before. Here's the deal. So if you're going to go pitch to somebody, the reason your tie-in to why the story is so important to you is because people forget that companies like ours, we have our deal with our Zahn, right? And that means the other people who have deals at Zahn, we can reach out to. So you might come in and be like, have this amazing story about a girl who does such and such, right? And I'd be like, oh, that's great. Megan has a deal over there too. She would be dope to write this. Instead, because you didn't tell me your tie-in. The reason is, I need to know you have way more stories to tell. Right? I need to know you're the only one without you going, I'm the only person who could do this. Instead, you got to tell that story of when I was a little girl, there was this little girl in my school who did this thing. She did blah, 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 blah. Imagine if we did a show about a girl who, you see what I mean? It's got to come from you. So I'm like, oh, she's in the headspace of that little girl, right? But if you just go, here's a story about a little girl.
Right.
I'm going, I bet Megan can write this. That's just how we think, right? So it's the same theory to when you're pitching the type of writer you are, having the tie-in back to why that's the type of stuff you write. Do you get where I'm going with that? That make a little sense?
Yeah, totally. It's, I mean, and so I'm interested to hear what you think, because like, I think that that leads to people feeling like you have to write something that's literally straight out of your personal experience. But it's not, right? So you just have to find whatever that personal connection is.
It's just, what's the connection?
Okay.
Right.
So if you have an idea, hypothetically, this is totally not me. If you have an idea that that is really completely unrelated to you, like, what are your thoughts on how you find that personal connection?
So, for example, like, before I was working over there with Ben, I was doing a lot of these assignments. And so they would have a book. I'd read the book, and I'd be like, this is an amazing book. If I were to write the book, I know the lead character is this person. The best friend is the one having the problem, though. They're the underdog. Now, it would still be their story, but it might be more of a two-hander because that's my point of view. You see where I'm going? So that I'd have to pitch it back to them in that way.
Interesting.
So they understood why I could make it more of a grounded story as opposed to this, you know, sci-fi story, whatever the hell, right? It still would have elements of that, but it would be more... in my way of the way that I, you got to know that that's what you can do though. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I always try to figure out where's my angle for me. And when you do that, as opposed to just going, oh, the book is about this, I have to write that. I'm going, how would I write this book though? Right. I am drawn to things that have heart. Right. So I always come back to that. I always in some way want to bring you, not necessarily like it's got to have melodrama to bring you to tears, but I always try to find a moment of that character doing something that just moves you. You know what I mean? In some way. And so I'm always trying to find those type of like where in the story. And that's the other thing is I'm a moments person. So like whenever I'm in a writer's room, I'm not the guy who's pitching every 20 seconds. I'm the guy who goes, I know what the problem is. What if we did this? Right? Or here's a big moment we could use. What if we did this? Right? And there's a skill to that, right? And there's an art to that. It may not always appear to be as helpful during the day when everybody's going crazy and you come in and go, bam, right?
Right.
But there's a special skill to that because it may help you to see the through line of something missing. I'm a moments person and I see what's usually missing in the through line somewhere, right? If that makes sense. But you have to figure that out for yourself because people, oh, I'm strong in dialogue. And then you read the script and you're like, where are you strong in dialogue at? right? You know what I mean? This is shit is only knows like a motherfucker. Right? And so I'm always trying to be careful when somebody says they're strong at something. I'm really trying to figure out why they're strong at something, if that makes sense. It's just why is in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you're open to understanding why, the more you're open to understanding how to evolve that part of yourself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow.
A little deep, but you know. He didn't know I had an engineer thing in my mind.
Yeah, you got all those building blocks in there, putting them together for us.
Exactly. I was going to ask you. Okay, so that's you. How did you guys end up over with Ben?
So we kind of came at it the same way, I think.
Yeah, because the show's up. I think we could talk about Cross a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So during the pandemic, I had met, before the pandemic, I had met Sam Ernst and Jim Dunn mm-hmm. on Carnival Row. And I knew immediately, I was like, these guys, I need to connect myself to them. I need to glom right. on. So every day in Carnival Row, you know, they'd be walking to the bathroom and I'd be like, hey, what do you think about this character? Like, what are you guys talking about today?
Right.
Like just trying to be a barnacle on their ship. And so the pandemic happens and Sam calls me up and he goes, hey, Jim and I have an idea for a podcast. Do you want to come help us do the technical stuff? Do you want to help us record, help us edit? You've got an engineer's brain, you know, I led with that.
Right.
And so I was like, hell yeah, man, I would love to do that. And so we started working on the writer's room with Sam and Jim. Mm-hmm. And lucky enough, Megan heard the podcast. And
is it up?
Yeah. We did a full season, really? I believe. Yeah, like 50 mm-hmm. episodes.
Oh, what?
Yeah, yeah. It was
a great podcast. It was just... they ended up getting the job on Cross and didn't right. have the time, unfortunately, to continue. But
oh, wait, they got a job?
I know, right? Yeah, it was crazy because it was like, so I heard the podcast and I thought it was just an incredible resource because the sort of premise of the podcast is that Sam and Jim, these two incredibly accomplished writer EPs, mm-hmm. show creators, showrunners, they are going to be your writer's room. And so they would have up-and-comers come on the show, pitch their ideas, mm-hmm. and then Sam and Jim would help them develop their ideas on the show.
Oh, that's cool.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you can learn so much just from listening to other people pitch their stuff. Okay. And plus,
that's why I listen to the pitch and
Exactly. So it was great. And so I'm listening to this, and then and I sent Sam a note. I had actually taken a class from Sam years ago. This was my first move to get into TV. I read a bunch of scripts. I read Sam and Jim's original pilot for their show Haven, mm-hmm. and I was like, This is fantastic. I want to learn how to write like these guys. Yeah. I searched for him online, found out that Sam was teaching a class right in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so I took his class and kept up with him over the years, little by little. So sent him an email, said, hey, I really love your podcast. And somehow or other, he knew that, I guess we'd had some conversation in the meantime, that I had been working for Spotify writing podcasts. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, hey, do you have any ideas for marketing? So that's how I got in on working with them on the writer's room with Sam and Jim. And we would always talk about how funny and awesome it would be if we could all be on a show together. Mm. And so lo and behold, about a year later, I was looking for work. And this goes to your point about mm-hmm. Taking a step that may seem like it's a step back.
Right.
Because I had already been staffed. But I had not been staffed a second time, and it had been like a year or more since I'd had a job.
Did she just skip over the fact that she'd been staffed already?
I know.
See what I'm talking about?
Just hold yourself back.
Yeah, I got staffed. I was on a show called Games People Play.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, and and then we just didn't get renewed. So that went away, and I wasn't seeing any traction in getting another staff writing job. And Sam... Sam hit me up and he's like, hey, would you be interested in a staff, support staff position? And in my head, of course, the first thing is like, ego. It's a shot to that ego. Yeah. Exactly. Like, oh, Jesus, am I going to take this step back? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I had wanted to learn from Sam and Jim since I very first started in TV. And the idea of actually being able to be in a real writer's room with them, I was like, that's a step forward for me. And then I found out it was with Ben Watkins, mm-hmm. whose work I was also a huge admirer
Shout
of.
Shout out to Ben.
Shout out to Ben.
Boss man.
We love you. And so I was like, okay, yes, I'm definitely doing this. And incidentally, the universe tests you. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I had an offer for a writing position.
Really?
It was not a TV job. Okay. It was a different type of writing job, mm-hmm. which would have been like full-time, great benefits, and then versus an writer's assistant mm-hmm. job that was only supposed to last for 14 weeks.
Right.
I was like, all right. The heart wants what the heart wants. So I did.
She's been going almost a year now.
It was crazy. But yeah, I took that job. And then Ben and Sam and Jim were able to get a second writer's assistant position. And
yeah,
JR got that. So we all ended up on the same show. Like, we had just laughed about, like, oh, haha, wouldn't it be awesome if that ever happened? And then it did.
That's hilarious. And yeah, then you are now the man sitting next to the band.
Yeah. Right after Cross, I was lucky enough, the script coordinator on Cross, David Myers, shout out.
Hey, David.
He set me up with another writer's assistant gig with a showrunner that he knew. So I jumped pretty quickly to another show.
I didn't realize you watched another show in between that.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. I've never had two jobs turn around like that so quickly back to back. I was planning to be out in the wind for a little bit. But so that show ended right about the same time that I got another text from Sam, and he said, Ben's looking for an assistant, are mm-hmm. you interested? And I said, yeah, sure. Mm. And so it was pretty quick. I interviewed with Ben. I was waiting for just any word at all. And finally, I got a call, and he said, so you're interested in this? And I said, yeah, I'm very interested in this. Mm-hmm. He's like, when can you start? And it was right around Christmas. And so I said, well, I get back to town the 27th, thinking he would be like, oh, come in like middle of January. And he goes, well, can you come in the 27th?
That's so big.
Yep.
And we've been hitting the ground running since then. It's That's been funny. Really, really fun.
That's funny. And you've been traveling and shit.
Yeah,
it's back amazing. And forth to Toronto and Louisville and shit.
Yeah, it's a dream come true, honestly. Yeah. I've been learning just so much. I've never seen this side of the business. You know, yeah. I've only been in writer's rooms when it comes to TV and film, mm-hmm. really just TV. Mm-hmm. And so to see this other side and see how the machine actually works, and to get an understanding of how a show goes from, you know, an idea to a writer's room to set, and now as we, you know, move on to the next parts of the process.
It's going to make you so much better at everything just because you understand.
Well, that's really the reason that I took the job. I mean, obviously working for Ben is great and it's fun, but mm-hmm. the real reason for me to take these assistant jobs is to learn.
Right.
And there was no better opportunity to learn than with Ben.
Yeah. That's dope. Well, we love Ben. I was going to say what's next, and y'all in the middle of shit now. I'm talking about what's next.
Yeah, we're working on an X-ray series for Amazon with this guy indeed. Named Hilliard Guest.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest show in the world. They didn't tell y'all?
Yeah.
that's been fun reading, you know, all the stories you guys have been coming up with so far.
There's been a fair few.
Yeah. It's been interesting, though. You know, I'm used to being a lot more involved in that whole side of it, so I'm just trying to focus on, you know, more production stuff mm-hmm. for Ben. But it's still been really, really cool on this side. There's a lot of just like little knick-knack, paddywhack stuff that y'all don't have to deal with that.
Oh yeah. You know,
that we have to deal with. There's it's a lot, you know, when you're dealing with. Because I've done shows like this before, and you know, every network is different. That's the weird. You work with different networks. It's just weird that every freaking network is different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think you get it at one, and then you go to another, and they're like all these different new rules you got to learn, and you know, the way that they, you know, accept things. I'm just like, y'all haven't figured out that this just slows everything down the mm-hmm. way you guys are. It's ridiculous. Anyway, I'm not going to get on it. You know me, Jay. I'll be going in.
I feel a confession coming on. That's all I'm going to say, because I want to hear all about this. Mm-mm, mm-mm.
If only there was a podcast where we could do this anonymously.
Hilarious. Well, thank y'all for coming, hanging out with me. I appreciate it. Yeah. The Hollywood Confessional.
Yes, yes, sir.
Where can people follow the show, follow you guys? Y'all don't, by the way, you guys only promote the show. You don't promote you guys' tags and stuff, just so you know.
Well, that's because, I mean, for me, it's, personally, I'm a little embarrassed of what mine is.
What? Why?
It's Write or Die Now. Yeah.
Why isn't it Megan? Why isn't it Megan Dane?
Listeners could see Hilliard's face at that moment. Yeah, I don't know, man. I was drunk. It was years ago. But
can we change it? I don't even know.
Oh yeah, you can change
can
it.
Can you?
But why would you?
Because here's the deal. Here's what I always say, and I don't know if you. I think your name is your name.
I'm at @JR_OnTheLine.
Which I'll take that.
That's
take
cute.
That.
It's a joke from my dad's favorite Vince Vaughn movie. So
I'll take that. I guess my theory is this, and I've said this on the show several times. The younger generation doesn't think about branding their name as well as they should. They would rather be writer such and such at whatever, because they don't want everybody to know, right? And because they haven't sat on this side, they don't realize. I'm like, what is that JR dude's email? What is
right.
it? It's I got 17 people with writer such and such, or what do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm like, I just want JR fucking Zora, you know, Zorathal, whatever.
Zamorathal.
That's what I said. You know what I mean? I just want Megan Dane. You know what I mean? Whatever. Unless 90 people have it and you have to underscore it or whatever the fuck. I get it, but just fucking brand your name in your emails, on your freaking, you know, what they call it. I'm telling you.
It's fair. It's good
advice. People need to be able to find you easily. You're making it hard for them. Trying to be cute with your name.
I mean, in my defense, I did start out life in L.A. on the run from a criminal. So there was like some residual
okay, that's
fear
fair.
There. I was trying to anonymize myself.
I'm going
to
let you slide.
But it's been a
but
few
all
years,
the rest of you bitches. If you ain't got no criminals after you bitches, y'all should have y'all.
That's great advice, though. I'll change it.
Exactly. So, the Hollywood Confessional, you can find you guys where?
At Fess Up Hollywood.
Why is that different?
Because Instagram has a limit on the number of characters you can use in your...
Hollywood
in your,
Confessionals?
It's too many. Yeah. Really?
You could have abbreviated it, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
We tried a bunch, and we liked Fess Up Hollywood the best. We had a bunch of options, but...
I feel like you should just call it Fess Up Hollywood, then the whole show. It's interesting.
It feels like Fess Up Hollywood's a call to action. Like, you find
I like
us
it.
A
That's
call,
what I'm yeah. saying. It sounds like a great hashtag.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's like you're doing two different brands. And the only, yeah. Just hear me out. I'm not trying to dog you guys at all. So I used to have Screenwriters RR on Twitter, and I realized I'm actually just promoting the exact... same thing on my Hilliard Guest and that. And I was like, why don't I have both of these?
Mm.
You see what I mean? I was like, mm-hmm. I need it all to go to either one place or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just taking away from people when I have it there and then I have it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I can retweet it and that looks cute in one place, but that's not enough, right? So that's why I was like, either I brand me or I brand that. That was my thought. So,
very
take
interesting.
It or leave it.
Yeah, we'll have to have that conversation. We've been talking a lot about marketing and yeah.
But I love the Fess Up
the show. And
that's great.
Yeah,
I actually like it better than the Hollywood Confessional.
Maybe we change it. I don't know.
Oh, I'm so attached to just
my we do,
do
like
you,
the
do you
like confessional
do
you imagery.
Growing up Catholic, doing all that. All that
we like
imagery.
The dumb stuff, you know.
I guess I feel like that could be part of the segment. Because you guys have several different segments kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe
no,
that Hollywood
could.
Confessional part could be a segment.
Yeah. It's definitely something to think about. We're working on our branding right now. So
yeah.
It just sounds like you're already branded. Anyway, cool. So where are you on Twitter, JR?
Twitter, I think I'm JR at JRThal93 maybe. I'm not as active on Twitter as I am on Instagram.
Okay, what's your Instagram?
My Instagram is at JR_OnTheLine.
Oh, that's right. You did say that. My bad.
Yes.
And what about you, Megan? Where are you at?
I will be at Megan's.
You can promote whatever it is. It's all good.
No, Megan Dane is good. I should change it. That really is like, I'm embarrassed. Somebody asked me for my Instagram yesterday and I was like embarrassed to tell them. And it was just a stranger on a hiking trail was like, oh, that's a pretty picture you just took. What's your Instagram?
That's funny. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter. I say Twitter like I'm cool, by the way. @HilliardGuest on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, everything.
Right.
I said it.
Yes, yes.
The man knows how to brand.
Anyway, so you guys can follow me all over the place out there. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you guys listen to. We're all over the world. Lots of listeners listening. We appreciate y'all. Lots of comments and stuff like that. Please go on screenwritersrr.com. You can get t-shirts on there. We have a Patreon page. Please donate $5 million on there. Just something small. whatever you can, we appreciate that too. Chris will be back in the next couple of weeks. I'm doing a bunch of episodes without him right now. He's busy, as I am too. Shit like that. Join with me for 2023, okay?
Hell yeah.
Appreciate y'all. Thank you again, JR. Megan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. This is awesome.
I said thanks for having me.
Anytime.
This is the Screenwriters Rant Room with JR and Megan.
Anyway, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what? Everybody. 2023. Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real. Welcome to the Rant Room. Wanna be a writer, well you gotta be a writer till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rant room, we let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hillier. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the rant room.